Now, Tech Talk with Alan Perry on CFAX 1070.
Welcome to Tech Talk on CFAX 1070 Radio for September 24th and 25th of 2022. Filling in for Alan Perry, who's down in Palm Springs leading workshops, I'm Ron Fraser. I'm a tech enthusiast, and before I retired in 2019, I was the longtime tech department manager at the London Drug Store on 8th Street and other stores before that.
And I'm Brian Pavlicic. I'm your Tech Talk producer. I'll be helping Ron get through all the tech news today. We're live on Saturday morning, and if you're listening on Sunday afternoon, this is the rebroadcast.
And if it's Saturday morning, you can text us at 107010. Please include your first name in the text, please. Or you can also phone into Tech Talk at 250-386-1161. Or on a smartphone, you can call star 1070. You can also email us at techtalk@cfax1070.com. Next weekend, Alan will be back, and we'll be joined by Gary Beyer from Tesseract Computers.
How have you been doing, Ron?
Good, good. It's been a busy few weeks,
yes.
Trying to finish up things around the house when the summer is still sort of hanging on for us the last few warm days. So that's been a challenge, but fun.
Yeah.
And nice to work in cooler days.
Oh, yes, certainly. I've been trying to get everything outside painted before the weather changes.
Exactly.
That's all my, just rushing those last minute exterior, you know, things before I move inside.
Well, I've been dealing with low-tech, digging up a sprinkler line. I've got one that's low pressure, and I'm scared there's a root in the line somewhere.
Uh-oh.
I've done everything else I can, so that's next.
So we've got a couple guests. You brought some guests along with you today, Ron. Can you introduce them?
We do. People that listen to the show probably know that we host international students, and we have for about 10 years. And two of the new ones we have right now, we have one girl from Brazil, and her name is Carolina. Hi, Carolina.
Hi, Ron. I'm Carolina from Brazil.
Carol is more likely that you like to be called, but Carolina.
Yeah.
And how long are you here for school?
I will be here for 5 months.
Nice. And so far, how's
it
been?
It's really good. I'm loving the island.
Good, good. Well, we do too, and we're happy to have you here. And our next special guest is from Mexico, Valentina.
Hi.
Hello. So welcome to Victoria. So what do you think of Victoria so far?
It's really nice, beautiful, a lot of places to see.
What's the biggest surprise, something that's really different from what you thought?
That all the people like walk and use bicycles and there is like no traffic.
And that's different. You're from Mexico City, you see mostly traffic, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's really interesting to find out how different things are and what our perceptions are. And I'm sure we'd have the same thing going down there. We'd go, wow, I didn't know it was like this.
Well, yeah, and people always make the comment, oh, you islanders, you're used to getting everywhere in 15 minutes, and if it takes longer, you're complaining about it.
Well, it's true. We talk about a rush hour in terms of minutes, so it's different from most major cities.
What?
Absolutely.
So I always love to get the young people perspective. What's hot in tech for you ladies right now? What are your favorite apps on your phones? How do you find that, young people are communicating these days?
Well, we use a lot of Instagram and TikTok, but there is like a new app. Well, it's not that new, but we use it a lot. Be Real.
Oh, yeah.
That you can take a photo of the moment that, what are you doing? And you can like post a photo that you have taken. You need to take the photo and it take a photo of like the front camera and the back camera. So
and unlike most other social media, you cannot delete this once you've taken it.
Yeah, that's cool.
And you can like react with photos and comment
and see what your friends are doing in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's very real.
Yeah.
Maybe too real sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like that you, like you mentioned, that you can only use the camera. You can't go for your photo gallery for something that you've touched up and cropped and edited. It's like, no, this is a real snapshot and it stays up there forever.
It's kind of the anti-Instagram because, Instagram influencers spend all this time with lighting and microphones and makeup and getting everything ready for the perfect shot, and that's what you see.
Yeah, I've helped manage Instagram accounts before, and you go out and it's like, oh yeah, get this angle, take 200 shots, and the whole time you're there, like, wow, I really didn't enjoy this event, I was just prepping for an Instagram shot. And so I've stepped away from all social media kind of for that, and multiple reasons is to just, I want to be present and maybe I'll snap one or two pictures, but if I don't, I'd rather actually attend the event.
Yeah, it's true, it's becoming more common, and that's one of the things. And you could go through this with several apps. You could be posting on Facebook, Instagram, Be Real, TikTok, like spend all your time doing that when you're at, you know, the Grand Canyon, for instance. That's where technology goes a little too far, I think, sometimes. So
yeah, I agree.
So phones are open. We are waiting for your calls at 250-386-1161. Phone board's clear, so you should be able to get on right away.
That was me dragging the phone across the table to make sure I can reach it. We're because it's just me and Ron today, I'm going to be taking apart more than usual, and I won't necessarily be able to pop over and answer the phones all the time. So you might call in and I might not be able to answer. So I'll cue you up. Most in the breaks is going to be the best time to get to us. So
yeah, let it ring too. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
Let it ring. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. First up, we should probably talk about the update. The iOS update for phones and tablets for your Apple device, 16.0.2.
Yes. And it's just a minor update. It's just a few bug corrections. The couple of fixes of note are there was a camera shake issue, and then there was a persistent copy-paste permissions pop-up where it would say something like, messages would like to paste from Discord. Are you going to allow this? And it's just like, well, I copied it on my phone and I want to move it over. You don't need to ask me every single time. So they've made some corrections to how frequently you're going to see those pop-ups.
Yeah, some of the real obvious ones they've taken care of right away. And that's a good thing about Apple, too. I mean, even when they come out with a new OS like this, within a very short period of time, you know, with all the users that update right away, they find out and they post patches. So it's a good thing.
And this has been a very good one in terms of, like, we sometimes encourage people to hold off a little while because there's going to be a bunch of bugs, but this has been very stable. Even these fixes are, like, minor issues. It's not like someone wasn't able to make a phone call for a week.
Yeah, I don't see major ones like phones locking up or rebooting or things like that. So,
yeah,
always small features.
I was going to mention, in case anyone's wondering about these iOS numbers, they're always in the format, like, number.number.number. And if you're wondering, the first number always describes the major version number. So this is like the yearly update that we get usually in September. So, you know, we've made the big move to iOS 16. And when you get 16, the other numbers will reset to zero because they're just counting incremental versions. And so the second number is going to be the minor version number when they release like new features and bug fixes. And then the last number is just the patch number when they're making alterations to the features or correcting and tweaking those bug fixes. So, you know, when you see 16.02, major version 16, it hasn't got a minor version yet, but the 0.2 at the end is this is the second like patch that they've put to it.
Yeah, so it tells you there's just two small patches to this whole OS that's come out since it's been out and nothing major.
Yes.
And that's more and more common with Apple as time goes on. They really are fine-tuning the OS definitely better than Android and some of the other ones for sure.
Yeah, and we'll get into that too. We have a bunch of tutorials links to them posted in the show notes today. That's number 11, and actually the next subsequent numbers, there's a good chunk of Apple stuff there with some of our favorite features and some quick tutorials. Like really, they're like two screenshots and four sentences worth to teach you how to use some of these new features in iOS that we like so much.
Well, and it's worth mentioning now, too, to get to the show notes, you want to go to shownotes.ca and then look for the 2022 notebook specifically.
Yes, they shouldn't. The redirect should now take you specifically to that one. So if you have it bookmarked, make sure that you just go and type in again shownotes.ca because the website that it's going to direct you to is different than what it used to. So your old bookmark is outdated, and so if you're not seeing the current show notes, that would be what we recommend.
Well, and then that'll give you a link to this particular article we're talking about with the updates and what it does and some of the interesting stuff we've got on item number 11. Under the tech news of the week, we talk about how to customize your lock screen, how to unsend messages, and a bunch of the new features that the iOS gives you.
Yeah, a big theme in this update is being able to undo what you've done or what you previously couldn't undo on your phone. So we're seeing edit or unsend an iMessage that's already been sent. And so you have a limit of 2 minutes there for that kind of editing.
If you've ever sent an email and notice that knot in the pit of your stomach after you've pressed the send button, this feature is for you.
Yes. Now, when you send emails from your iPhone, you have 10 seconds. It's just because they've built in a delay. And when you send it, you'll get a pop-up at the bottom of the screen with an unsend button, and that will remain there for 10 seconds. So if you quickly notice it, something wrong, or if maybe you accidentally hit send, you can just quickly undo it and revert. That's a really useful one. The one I really like, well, actually, I like a lot of these. But multi-stop routing in maps. Now you can say, you know, I've all got my map set up to go up island. Oh, but I want to hit a gas station. No, oh, I want to hit that cafe. I can't remember exactly where it is, but I'll just punch it in. You can now on the directions tab just add new checkpoints and rearrange them in the order that you want to hit them in.
Before you had to just go, it was A to B, and you didn't get the ability to add the stops in.
Yeah, I was always frustrated because I was like, oh, actually, I want to go here on my way up island, but I don't want to have to go research for the other thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it can factor in if there's a good route that kind of, you know, fits them all in. So, yeah, rerouting is really nice. A couple other ones that we'll just mention that we have tutorials for is you can now identify plants, flowers, birds, and insects using your iPhone camera. You can use your camera to convert currencies, time zones, temperatures, and more. The iPhone camera can instantly translate signs and text. This is really nice. Just hold your phone up and you get instant translation there. And you can also add medication and vitamin reminders to the health food app.
I'm really curious how well the identity feature works on the new iOS 16 as well, because I've recently just started using Google Lens.
Okay, yeah.
And really using it, because we always talk about what kind of flower is that? What kind of tree is that?
Yeah.
What is this item? What is this device?
Yeah.
I can't believe how accurate Google Lens is. And when you think about it, and you think about the photos, this is the double-sided, double-edged sword here, because you think about how many people's data Google has access to
and
how many pictures they've taken.
Yeah.
There's probably no other resource in the world that can match up what you're trying to do with what you want to know.
Right.
With what's out there and already in their database, because someone somewhere has taken a photo of it, excuse me, and labeled it. And so all the times I've tried it in the last probably 20 tries, there might be one where it wasn't quite sure.
Yeah.
Just bang on every other one. And you get a lot of resources to research after you hit the initial answer for your question. So try it. If you're using Google anyway to search for things, try Google Lens. It's spectacular.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I get they've had reverse image search for so long. I think, you know, we're basically utilizing that system to, you know, search any other images of plants that would meet this one. And, and the AI is so smart in scanning and recognizing patterns. And yeah, that's a cool one. I'm glad to get the Android perspective. We don't get that as much these days. But let's get going to our first break. Now would be a time to get a couple of calls queued up. I missed some while I was chatting already. So we're just going to be gone for a minute, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Tech Talk on CFAX 1070 for September 24th and 25th. If it's September 24th right now, we'd love you to call in. We've got an open phone board at 250-386-1161. You can always text us at 107010. And of course, we like you to call. We do like your calls, because interacting, it's a lot easier to try and answer any questions you might have. Filling in for Alan Perry, who's down in Palm Springs leading some workshops right now. I'm Ron Fraser. I'm a tech enthusiast and a retired London Drugs department manager. I did that job for 38 years, so I think it's time for a rest.
Yeah, Ron's the legend, the London Drugs legend.
Well, I don't know. I could last a long time. Let's just put it that way. Dealt with a lot of people over the years, and I enjoyed it. I have to tell you, the people are the best part of any job in retail.
Yeah.
You know, all the products were interesting. I love technology. I love learning about new things. And I started that in about 1992 in computers.
Yep.
When computers were still really expensive and really slow. I think the first laptop I sold was a Toshiba with a 9-inch monochrome screen for about $15,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that machine now.
Oh, I tell you. You know, the problem is with old technology, it's not even good for anything but a boat anchor, a doorstop.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
An old car or an old building or an old tool, like, they're all kind of useful. That's the really sad part about old technology quite often.
Well, that's an interesting point. Like, we were at the Heritage Acres Fall Fair over the weekend.
Yeah.
And look at those steam engines and some of those devices. Like, how, you know, what was the age of those? Like, they're 80, 100 years old?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Some of them more than 100, some of the steam engines. And they're still useful today. I mean, they're not efficient, certainly.
Right.
but in their day, like, they were high tech. That was some interesting technology. And when you look at the manufacturing of those and the intricacy,
it was
incredible. It's really a great contrast to go out there and see how they did farming in those days, as opposed to the John Deere tractor we saw down at CES.
Yeah, the thing that it's like, you know, the size of a, I don't know, a small apartment complex.
Yep.
And, you know, the tires were, I don't know, themselves.
Well, we stood
like
beside them in one of
something.
The photos, and the tires were even with the top of our heads, so somewhere around 6 feet, right? And those ones were autonomous.
Right.
They could go through and harvest on their own. And they could even tell the moisture level of the grain, so they knew what to harvest, what not to harvest. Pretty incredible.
Yes.
A lot of money.
Right, right.
Millions. I mean, farmers work hard enough, and it's expensive to do that job now.
Certainly.
Anyway, that's some of the technology that we saw last weekend out at Heritage Acres. Yeah. If you've never been, you should give it a go. It's really interesting, especially when they have an event.
Yeah.
And they have all these engines and machines running.
I forgot how big it was, how far back the property went, and walk through the forest. And there, I really enjoyed the museum and seeing the old phone boards, switches and such.
It's huge. If you haven't seen it before, but you've seen it when you drive by the highway, it's a place where just past Island View Road, and there's little trains that run there on their events. And that's all you see. You really just see the tiny part of it. A lot of it is behind that. They have a working blacksmith shop that's still used all the time. They have a museum that now I would venture to tell you is better than the Royal Victoria Museum, since they've taken out most of the displays in there. So if you've ever got time, really interesting place to go. It's free during the week when they have a special event. And they have all the steam engines running and the little trains running. There are fees for those, but it's really inexpensive and just a great place to take the family. Okay, we're going to start talking about some of the scams that we've seen, some of the new things that are coming out, and you may have seen them on your phone. Some from the CRA, we're getting ones from the Canada Revenue Agency again now. And often they'll come as a text to you, but they might come as an email. And again, one of the things I'm sure Alan has spoken about before, and that we can really generalize in a lot of these scams, is that if you get anything that's unsolicited in the form of an email or even a text directly to your number asking you to log on to your account, don't do it. We know for sure it's a scam. None of those will ask you to do that. They won't send you an email asking you to phone this number, log on to your account. Never, never, never. If you're concerned about it, make a call directly. Look the agency up yourself. Make the call directly if it's the CRA and you're concerned that something might be going on. But they won't contact you this way. This is not how they do it.
Yes. Assume everything's a scam. If there's the 1 in 100 where it wasn't and you get a late fee, you're better off.
Yeah, and so many of them lately are miscalculation on your bill and you were overcharged.
Yeah.
Amazon, we noticed, charged your account for $1,700. If you don't do anything, if you don't click this link, we'll charge you the full amount.
Yep.
None of those.
Yeah, urgency is another key there. Nothing's that urgent, but if your computer's trying to, if something you've got is trying to get you to urgently respond, it's probably a scam.
Yeah, and along those lines, I'll mention something, too, that Alan has been talking about a lot lately, and he's talking about people getting away from their Shaw email or even Gmail.
Sure.
And getting onto another, like if you have an Apple Mail,
yep.
Or in the case of myself, I'm using Outlook almost exclusively now. I have to say, since I switched over to Outlook for almost all my emails, spam emails have almost stopped completely. It has a brilliant filter. They're filtered out, but I get so many in my Shaw email box.
Yep.
Every second email is a scam or spam.
Would you do you have any numbers off the top of your head? Like if you said a daily on Shaw versus a daily on Outlook?
There's days and days I'll go without ever seeing one on my Outlook email, ever seeing it. And I'm using it for everything.
Wow, yeah, I feel like I might get one or two.
Yeah, it's just really rare. So I know they do a better job filtering.
Certainly, yeah. We know a lot of the features on Shaw, even if they weren't going to be sold, we would say, get off this service. You maybe don't know how good things have gotten
since then. Part of the reason is Outlook is a mail provider, so they're trying hard to give you a better mail experience for sure.
Right.
So they work at stuff like that to try and come up with a good artificial intelligence program that tells what is spam and what is not and what you should click and what you should stay away from. Do we have a call on the line?
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead here. Line one, we've got Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Hi, Steve. How can we help you?
Yeah, my iPhone 11 just upgraded to 16 overnight, and I've noticed a few changes. I've yet to experience the unsend and whatnot, but looking forward to that kind of thing. But in the meantime, in order to listen to Tech Talk on CFAX, as well as Adam Sterling's program and other news events, I've been using Simple Radio. And typically, when I bring the station up, I have no problem when I essentially pause the iPhone. In other words, hit the off button, and Simple Radio is still playing it. But when I tapped the screen in the past and it came back up, there'd be a little window with a volume slider on it. And you could just take your finger and turn it down. Well, I have that little window, and the slider is there, or the slot for the slider, but there is no dot in the slider to turn the volume either up or down. I've got to fumble about with the absolutely ridiculous, annoying, and painstaking volume buttons on the side of my iPhone 11, which I cannot understand why they did it that way, but they did it.
Right. You tipped me off to this. I hadn't known about this one, but in doing some research here, you are not the only one. A lot of people are upset about this feature bug. They have removed it. And, you know, there's a lot of people are complaining online and requesting to Apple. Sadly, in the 16.0.2 update, they didn't patch that. So it looks like we are still without a slider on the lock screen for, you know, so if you have a media thing playing, even if you're locked, you could just quickly jump in and drag the slider for volume, and that's gone now.
Apple right now has restricted that on the lock screen for this update.
Yes.
So far.
I was hoping, because there's a lot of, you know, features they've added and where you can adjust things and adjust the lock screen, and I thought this was going to be maybe one of those ones that you could turn on and off, but the answer right now is that it's been removed.
Well, and just making an educated guess from what we've seen in the past and what I've seen on Android phones is the volume control on the lock screen is a huge deal for most people.
Yeah.
When you're playing something, it's the easiest, quickest way to react to that, to change the volume if you need to change the volume.
Yes.
I think they'll respond to that if it's not some really weird programming glitch. They're worried about bugs or something infiltrating your phone. But like everything, brand new OS, you've got to give them some time, you know?
Yeah.
And I think if they do it, it'll work for all the apps that require that, and that might be the issue, making sure that it works with all the apps that have some sort of screen volume control and not just one or two.
And they've rebuilt so much of the lock screen right now.
Yeah, it's such a new thing for them to have the always-on lock screen that gives you that, so...
Yeah, I'm hopeful that this will come back, Steve, but sorry, I don't have a fix for you right now.
Not a problem, guys. You two are doing a great job in Alan's absence.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah, and look forward to the rest of the program.
Okay,
right,
thank you. You take care.
You as well.
Tech Talk with Alan Perry on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Tech Talk on CFAX 1070 for September 24th and 25th. I'm Ron Fraser, filling in for Alan Perry, who's down doing some training in Palm Springs. I'm a tech enthusiast, and before I retired in 2019, I was a manager for London Drugs for years and years and years, many, many, many.
Yes, good to have you, and I'm Brian Pavlicic, your Tech Talk producer. So what were we going to get into?
If we're live, if you're listening to us on Saturday morning, we're live. If you're listening on Sunday morning, this is a rebroadcast. Please do not phone in. But if you would like to phone in, we have lots of lines available at 250-386-1161. We'd like to hear your questions and hopefully give you a hand today.
Yes, and try to get in at those breaks is the best time. Just because I'm talking with Ron, it's hard for me to answer the phone right now.
So we've got a couple texts from listeners here. One of them is iOS 16 stable now, and should I update my iPhone 13 Pro Max?
Yes, go for it, certainly. The reception has been really great, and we've been enjoying the new features, so yeah, we recommend you go ahead.
Yeah, and they're at 16.0.2 now, so they've already addressed a few little problems that have come up, and they'll continue. They really jump on things pretty quickly, and we didn't see any major faux pas with 16. That was good.
Yes.
You know, unlike some of the other updates, this one has been pretty smooth, so I'd say, yeah, go for it. Another person, Gordon, was texting in, and he says he's got an iPad Pro, and the update says he's running 15.7. How do we get the iPad Pro to update to 16?
Yeah, what did he say? Which version of the iPad? If it's the iPad Pro, it's probably a newer one.
He's not saying, but if he's running 15.7, it should be able to update to 16.
Right.
Make sure you have automatic updates turned on, and that you're on a Wi-Fi network. It has to connect to a network, obviously, to get that one. There is a way to force it to update to 16 too, if you're not seeing it automatically and you've got it set up as automatic. Also, I would reboot the iPad too. just in case it's stuck on an update or something in between, you want to start with that. Reboot it if you are already set to automatic updates, and then see if it loads into 16 when you do that.
Yeah, there's a... confirm your compatibility. You can check online and make sure that that version of the iPad Pro can get it. And then there's potentially, if you're using a... I doubt this is the issue. If you're using a beta profile, you might not be getting the updates automatically.
Yeah, no, it looks like he's using a full 15.7.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I mean, first go-to, probably just a reboot, and it's just a minor thing. But, try a couple of those little quick things and fire us a text if it's you're still having an issue, and we'll go a little bit deeper on that.
Yeah, automatic update set and all that. The other one, I don't have a name on this one, but someone has an XP430 printer that won't print. The Wi-Fi's okay, the ink's okay. They've done all the troubleshooting. It'll print a line or some words, but not an email text.
Okay, so it's seeing the printer is there, like you're able to pick it from your printer preferences. It's talking to Windows, but yeah. you're getting a line.
Yeah, so when I see these kind of things, the first thing I say is turn off the printer. Mm-hmm. Turn off the computer, like shut it right down, not go to sleep, but turn it off, power it off.
Yep.
Leave it off for about 30 seconds, then turn the computer back on and the printer back on. I've seen before where things are stuck in the print buffer, mm-hmm. and they just don't clear, and it's some weird gobbledygook that prints out odd stuff like this. So when you see that, that's the first thing to do.
Yes.
The next thing is to make sure you've got the latest version of the driver for the printer, particularly if you've already updated or recently updated your operating system, whether it's for Windows or for your Mac or whatever you're printing from. So you want to be sure that the printer software is matching what you've got, if it's possible.
Yeah, so you're just going to search the go look at your model number on your printer, just search that with the word drivers,
yes.
and then you're going to be looking for the website of the manufacturer there.
Yeah, make sure you're at EPSID.com for this one particularly.
Yes, exactly.
Then search for the XP430 drivers. And you want to find out that it's compatible with with whatever version of the operating system you're running, because that does happen at some point where they stop producing new drivers for a printer if it gets old enough.
Sure. Often on the driver page, they will have a different link depending on what operating system you're running. So.
Yeah,
that'll be presented to you when you go to their website.
Yeah, if you do all those things and it's still not printing or it's printing out weird things, I mean, then I think you could have a problem with the printer, or it could have just aged out and it's not compatible with what you're doing anymore with your operating system on whatever device you're printing from.
Yeah, I would generally expect the printer to present you with some errors in that case, but
They don't always, especially if they do some sort of printing. And sorry, the last thing is, for sure, uninstall the printer driver and reinstall it in case it's been corrupted or corrupted by something else. That is a possibility, too. So that covers all of it.
Yep.
Yep. Pretty much. Hopefully that takes care of the problem.
So I know this has been a lot of iOS talk, but there are a couple, new features here and things that we still do want to touch on there. With iOS 16, they added two long-awaited new features to dictation, and I'm loving this. So you no longer have to say your punctuation out loud. It's able to infer it from what you're saying. My experience is it's been right most of the time. I guess you don't have one. So.
I haven't used it, you're saying if you say, hey, are we going to the store today? It will automatically turn that into a question with a question mark at the end.
Exactly.
So it understands your inflection or speech pattern.
So you don't have to speak as strangely as like, comma, exclamation mark, new line, tab, over. Yeah, so that's easier. And now the other great part about dictation is you can seamlessly switch between dictating and typing. So when you tap the microphone icon on the keyboard to begin the dictation, it will stay open even if you switch to using the keyboard. So you'll see the keyboard will remain on the screen at any time. You can just stop what you're saying and type a word in, and then you can continue speaking. So you might want to do this if it's a name that Siri often gets wrong, or if there's something you don't want to say out loud to the people around you, you could quickly type that next sentence and then continue dictating.
That's cool. If that works, because that kind of speak takes a while to learn. I know Alan's done it for years, and when I started to do it, it feels so unusual.
Yes.
To put in your comments. It sounds like a Victor Borge comedy routine. That's aging myself, but yeah.
Back to another news item. Number 16 is we were talking about the reception of iOS 16 is so that just 10 days after release, more than 1 in 4 iPhone users have upgraded their device. And this is the fastest uptake that we've seen with an operating system. which the record was held by the last one, by iOS 15. So,
well, and this is really helpful because the more people that update, the more chance Apple has to understand how it's working or not working, if it isn't. And they can put the fixes out very quick if need be. So the more users that use it as quickly as possible, great.
Yeah, it's funny because some of us used to hold off because we were going to wait for the bugs to be fixed. But actually, as a whole, if we all just get it, we're going to get those bugs shown quicker. And I mean, and we're hoping Apple's, you know, developing more reliable systems right from the start. But yeah, I think it actually, you're right, it does help when we all
for
download
sure.
it.
I'll participate in part of the learning here. So I wanted to talk a bit about the ArriveCan app. So the Government of Canada just made an announcement saying they're going to scrap the requirement for ArriveCan app.
Oh, yes. Also with that is the proof for COVID vaccinations to enter or re-enter Canada. I don't know. I like the ArriveCan app. The big point that, you know, Alan has made, that is you can use your iPhone app to clear customs. So while everybody's lining up for customs, you get to go to that short line and say, yeah, here it is on my app. I already completed it. Thanks. I'll go make my connecting flight.
Yeah. So in their initial statement, they said, we're making it optional. And I'm thinking, well, what's the use of optional if you don't have to use it? Why would you want to use it?
Yeah.
But that's a great point because you've preloaded all your information on the secure app.
Yes.
And it's a really quick way for them to screen you throughout the border. So that's why you would want to hang on to it if you already have it. I guess the difference would be it doesn't matter now if you're vaccinated or not. They don't care.
Oh, right.
So if that's not up to date on the app, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm glad that they are you know, not making that mandatory. Like, they're at least catching up with what we're doing right now.
Yeah, and masking on planes is still the only question. They don't have an answer for that right now. You still have to mask up on a plane if you're in Canada.
Yeah.
But as soon as you go to the U.S.,
Seems like it should still, especially because we can fly with COVID now.
Yep.
I'd prefer to have the mask on throughout the flight, but we also know that the ventilation on the airplanes is so good. I'd like to actually see those numbers. Like, what realistically, like if you had one person on a flight, what's the chances that they could transmit?
I've heard that too. I've heard a few experts talk about the fact that the filtration on the planes is such that it's not an issue. And where you're really going to get it, if you're going to get it, is standing in line for screening or in the airport, where you're all breathing the same air that really isn't treated. So that was the issue with wearing a mask when you go to the airport. Once you get on the plane, in general terms, you're a lot safer.
Yeah.
You know, you're still really close to people, and proximity is an issue. I mean, if I were going to fly, I would still wear a mask, but that's just me.
Yep.
And if people have the choice, I think that's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
at this point. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go to a quick break here. Now's the time to get in on the phone line, 250-386-1161, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Tech Talk on CFAX 1070. Here, if you're listening on Saturday, the show is live. If you're listening on Sunday, we're recorded, so thank you for listening. But please don't call in on Sunday. But today you can at 250-386-1161. And I'm here with Brian Pavlicic.
Yes, nice pronunciation there. I'm your Tech Talk producer, and we're going to go straight to the lines. We've got Tony. You had a question. We had been talking about stuff like print drivers. Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, this is a little different, but it's a frustration I have. I've got a Hewlett Packard Compact personal computer, desktop.
Okay.
And I just recently replaced the hard drive with a 1 trilobyte, one of the ones with a disk in it. And I was amazed at how I was able to transfer, you know, when I put it in the machine, it just simply automatically transferred everything over. It was beautiful.
Cool.
The only thing it didn't do was to add sound. So I'm on the impression that I need to contact Hewlett Packard and download an audio driver.
Oh, so you totally reloaded the operating system?
Yeah.
Okay. And you have no sound.
Computers, and one broke down on me, like the motherboard, it just stopped, refused to work.
Okay.
So I took it into a computer shop, and they test the power, and the power was okay. And then they test a couple of things, and they just said, "No, it's the motherboard. You know, this is gone."
Sure.
So what I did was I took out the 160 gigabyte hard drive that was in there.
Ah, and you put it in a new machine.
And I put in, with my second machine, I just swapped it over, and it transferred everything over, period, except that it's now dead quiet.
Yeah, it would load drivers for that first machine for sound, so that's what it is. The second machine you put it in will have a different piece of hardware to decode the sound on it.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is the second machine a build, or is it a brand name? Or
They're both Hewlett-Packard compacts from the year 2011-ish.
Yeah, so you should be able to look at HP's website, put in the exact model of that new tower you've put it into.
Did that.
And look for the sound driver.
Yeah, I did that. It recognized, like, it came back on the screen showing me a picture of my computer and the model, you know, they recognized the model number. And then there was a little whirly bird going around, and it said this may take up to 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after a half an hour, I tried it again, and the same thing. So I wasted an hour. In the meantime, there was a little bar that came up. It says, "Did you want to talk?" But it's talking virtually, not in reality.
Yeah.
You click on that, and it gives you paraphrased questions to ask. But it's not my question. I want to know how I can download this thing.
Yeah, go back to the beginning. Don't have it auto detect. That's where it's locking up on you, where it's trying to auto detect your machine.
Mm-hmm.
There
okay.
should be a spot where you can enter the model number manually. You want to do that.
Oh, so have you gone to the HP support page?
Yeah, that's where you said you were on HP's page, yeah, Tony?
Yeah, that's what I did, they gave you three choices about support, so I clicked on one of them, and basically all they do is they list questions that you click on, but they don't relate to the fact that how do I actually make a driver download?
Well, if you start at the right page, you want to go to the HP support page, first of all. That's where you want to be. So once you go to HP.com, you then click on support and then enter the model number for your machine. And once you do, it will show you all the drivers and all the manuals and everything available for the machine. And just by clicking on them, then they'll download and install.
Okay, do you think the barrier may be the fact that it's 11 years old and the fact that it's Windows 7?
It's Windows 7.
It's possible, but they keep drivers for a long time in my experience. So, I mean, it could be, but did you find the machine when you searched? You couldn't find it
I was amazed.
Okay. If you find it, then under support, it should list all the drivers available, and specifically for Windows 7, too, for that machine. Now, because Windows 7 is no longer supported, they may have pulled that off.
Right. That very well may be where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
HP also has a support assistant tool you can download to run that can help you through it. Have you tried, in headphones and in the speakers on the laptop, do you get sound? Have you tried to see if you can get sound through the headphone jack?
Oh, I've tried everything. The thing is, it was working before. I had a beautiful setup. I used one computer as a media player for my television.
Mm-hmm.
So this way, I could watch stuff on TV that would be from the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But then when my regular computer died, I thought, okay, well, I don't. I've got all the connections and switches and so on to go from one to the other.
Sure.
But I'm absolutely amazed that the printer worked. It was an old Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah, it's going to be the driver.
105, that worked.
Yeah, for the audio card.
Yeah.
Everything that was on the hard drive was moved over. Work 6, which was in paramount for me because it's a program I bought.
Well, video tends to work because the drivers are a little more generic or can be for the video display, but audio is a problem. There were so many audio manufacturers that if they stopped manufacturing drivers for it, you could run into a problem. If you really want to use that machine, if it has a spare slot in it to install an audio card, you might be able to get like a $20 audio card from one of the places in town that sells them.
Yes, exactly. It'll just USB Connect, and then the card itself will have extra outputs for your
and it should automatically recognize it for the new cards when you put them in, and that would load a new driver for the current version of Windows that you're using, and it should work. Can't tell you that 100%, though. You really have to try it to find out.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks, Tony, for calling. We're just going to head to another break here, and we will be right back.
Welcome back to Tech Talk here on CFAX 1070. My name is Ron Fraser. I'm sitting in for Alan Perry while he's away doing some training in Palm Springs. If you're listening to us today, it's Saturday the 24th, but you might be listening to us on Sunday, in which case this is our rebroadcast. Please don't call in. But today, we'd love you to call in at 250-386-1161. And we is me and the producer of the show.
I'm Brian Pavlicic.
Yes, and he's the guy that makes this all run. I don't know how he does it. It's pretty amazing. You should see all the buttons and sliders here. So
yeah, it's really interesting. When Alan's away, I got to do double duty, and it's really tack. It's like singing and playing guitar at once. You're just like you're not really focusing on doing either, and you just kind of try to keep moving.
Well, I think you do a great job, and I couldn't do it, and I'm sure most people couldn't if they see what you have to do. It's pretty amazing.
Thanks, Ron. So we only have a few minutes here before the top of the hour news here, but. The CEO of Rogers says that their $26 billion deal to buy Shaw could still close later this year. Let me remind you how late in the year it is. That's very optimistic.
Well, they thought this would be done. We're talking way back in the spring now, where they thought this would be done in fairly short order and isn't, right?
Yes, it is quite a complicated issue. And there was a recent analysis report indicating that the Rogers-Shaw deal could easily drag into mid-2023. So, my sense is still that it's inevitable. Shaw's not in a position to continue on. You know, they've stopped updating. They've said that basically they're not going to be able to do all these updates to stay in the market.
Well, and honestly, I'm kind of happy that the Competition Bureau is sitting on it, because we don't have enough competition in Canada in these things. When I talk to like our students from other countries, we talk to how much data they have on their phone plans particularly.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. There's someone from Spain that was talking about having 100 or 140 gigs for $40 or $50 a month.
Yeah, right.
You know, no problem. And it worked anywhere in Europe. One of the plans, there's a couple plans like that, where you can go anywhere in Europe. Like, if we need something like that in Canada and the U.S.
It's way too common to be paying $100-plus phone bills.
Yeah, and I understand in some cases the phone companies are discounting the phones. And
right,
so they're making it up on the other end. Like, they're discounting the phone, but you're paying $85 a month for your service. So, and the way I think about this is, don't discount the phone. That's fine. The price of the phone is the price of the phone. That's fine.
Yep.
But give me a deal on the service, because that's a monthly thing. And they know that once you finish your contract, most people just keep going.
Right.
And
right.
Don't look for different prices. And they're not going to send you an email going, hey, you know what? The plan you're on right now for the next 2 weeks is half the price you're paying.
Yes.
You will never get that email. But I have gone online, and I still do all the time. Mm-hmm. You should always check, because if there's a deal, you can phone them up or self-service. You can do this with most of the companies.
Yep.
And go, hey, I want this plan that's an extra 10 gigs a month for $20 less than I'm paying right now.
Sure. When you are in that point, you know, talk to somebody you know that's a little more techie, or if, you know, they understand going through the websites. Like, I do this a lot for people, is when I'm there, I'll say, hey, can I see your bill?
Yep.
If you don't mind. And then you'll say, okay, well, this, and you know, I have an idea of what's kind of cheap and what the intro deals are. And I just get them on the line right away and say, hey, you know, we've been out of our contract for a year. I think you can do something better. And, you know, often I'm leaving people's places and they're saving now $50 a month.
Well, they'll almost always do something for you, because there's, especially at this time of year, there are deals running at back to school, at Christmas, you know, at vacation time. Like, there's times where they pick these kind of deals, but definitely check. If you're paying a lot of money for your monthly bill, go and look online at what your company is offering right now and give them a call. You might save a lot of money.
Yes.
We're going to be back in a moment.
Tech Talk with Alan Perry on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Tech Talk here on CFAX 1070. I'm Ron Fraser, sitting in for Alan Perry, along with Brian Pavlicic.
Thanks, Ron. Yeah.
And if you're listening to us on Saturday, this is a live show. If it's Sunday, it's a pre-recorded show, and please don't call in. But you can still always have a look at the show notes. Just go to shownotes.ca and look for 2022 show notes, and you'll be able to follow along with all the things we've got here today and specific websites to go to and things to do if you're looking for answers to some of your questions or more depth in the things we're talking about. Now, a few people had texted in to say they weren't able to get iOS 16 or it hadn't automatically updated on their iPad Air. Someone has an iPad Pro. They're still sitting at version 15 or something. So with the automatic update, the way they roll them out is they don't do them all at the same time. So it might be that it hasn't been automatically applied to yours yet, and it will be. If you want to do it right away, you can. You just need to plug it into a computer that has iTunes, either a Windows PC or a Mac, has to have a current version of iTunes on it. You plug it in, and one of the buttons there, after you plug it in, it will recognize your iPad or your device, and it'll tell you what it is. It'll tell you the version it's running, and you hit the update button. And the update button will, when you check for updates, will tell you that version 16 is available. And you should be able to force it to do it there.
Yes. Otherwise, you know, normally you would go settings, general, updates, and you should usually see it there. But I think that's what these last couple techs have been about, is they're just still not even seeing it pop up there. So
yeah, if it hasn't been pushed to your device yet. I don't know how they decide it. It's real random. If it's a group or just a geographical area, I don't know. But I know that a lot of people are offered it and a lot don't see it right away. But the manual update should work for everyone.
Yes.
So connecting your device, whatever it is, to iTunes, making sure you have the latest version of iTunes and check for update, it should then apply it and do the update for you. That should work. I'd really like to know if that does work for you.
Yeah, when your device pops up, there'll be a summary tab. You know, there's music, films, TV programs will show up as sections under your iPhone. But there is a summary tab, which will tell you, you know, your capacity and you know, other details there. And that's where you'll be able to check for an update. A common thing that people will run into is if you don't have any space.
Right.
Also, it might not. But usually that won't successfully update. It will show you that it can, but it will never get there.
Yeah, you should get a message on it saying there's not enough room to do it when you try and apply it.
Yeah. So then we just wanted to come back to, again, we were talking about the Rogers buyout of Shaw, which is, you know, causing a lot of people to decide to migrate their email accounts. If you're somebody with a Shaw account, we recommend, you know, reaching out to somebody that you know and trust, and they can help you to migrate and set up a new email address and do some of that homework of, you know, contacting BC Hydro or whoever necessary, so that when they need to reach out to you, they have a current email address for you.
And that's important. Over the years, I think we all do this. We use an email address as a point of contact or mm-hmm. reset for our account or even for payment. And so to make sure that's up to date is really good practice to check that once in a while. Mm-hmm. Once you've done that and you decide you've got thousands of emails you want to keep, I know that we have resources for people to do that. I go back to the beginning, though, and question sometimes, do you really need 5,000 emails? Like, just because you've always had them,
yeah.
Is there a reason to move them all forward? Or can you get that information again by talking to the person, Googling some other way rather than keeping a hard drive full of emails? And I know some of you definitely want them all, but
right.
But do think hard about that, because a couple of times, not by choice, I've had to start again
yeah.
with emails because an update goes awry or a hard drive fails without a backup or something. I've
right.
seen lots of those in the past. And almost without exception, most of the people are like, oh, well, you know what? It was interesting to look back, but I really didn't need a lot of those.
Right.
So think of that first, too, and you might save yourself a lot of time and trouble.
Yeah.
Worrying about that, you know, as we move forward. Because so many people today, I know the young people today, yep. email is almost a non-issue. All they use it for is second factor authentication.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Or something where the email is the only thing they can use to contact someone. But it's used a lot less frequently. And I think the fact that the major carriers are all staying away from it is a pretty good indication of that, that their customers going forward in the future
yep.
are not using email so much.
Right. It's mostly now like you want to register for a Netflix account. You want to register for this. You're filling out a form. There's going to be a spot for an email. They need it, you know, and it's like your mailing address. They just need somewhere to be able to reach you for those things. But, you know, for other than that, it's not, you know, doesn't play a huge role. So as long as
yeah.
they can currently reach you, does it matter if you have that backlog? You know, I think of when I was moving more frequently and it was so nice every time I moved. There was like, I never pulled out this box and looked at it in the 3 years I was here.
Yes.
I'm not taking it with me.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know,
exactly.
If you could move over, you know, forward a few of the emails that are important to you to your new address. And if you lose the rest, it's okay. But I know also, you know, a lot of records are in there. You might have memories that are in there. And, you know, certainly we are here to help if you want to migrate that address and get some help with, you know, contacting services that need an updated
yeah,
address for
I
you.
Mean, that's really valid. It's a personal thing and it's really valid if you need to do that. A lot of the people we spoke to that had emailed they wanted to keep it is because friends had sent photos to them in the email
yep.
and they weren't really sure how to pull them out.
Okay.
And so if you need help with that, item number 21 in the show notes has a list of all the different ways you can get help to do that. So
yes, myself, David Jones, obviously Alan, A10 can help with that, MXN, Charles Martin, there's a long list of us that can help with that migration process. So
yeah, if you need a hand, reach out. We have it there in the show notes. Item number 23. So with more than 4,000 groups and people urging the CRTC not to allow TELUS to charge a surcharge on bills paid via credit card, TELUS is defending a plan to add a 1.5% credit card surcharge starting in the middle of next month. The CRTC has promised to issue a ruling by the end of this month. So why would they have to charge you an extra 1.5% to use the credit card? I mean, because of credit card fee, but
yeah.
Every other store, almost everyone else, it's just part of doing business.
Yeah, I'm sorry, multi-billion dollar conglomerate, TELUS, that you don't want to pay 1.5%.
Well, it's just a way to scrape another 1.5% out of the consumer's pocket.
More hidden fees.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't agree with that. And I know, great, they could just add 1.5% to everyone's bill and say it's just a charge, just the normal cost of doing business, and we wouldn't complain. But maybe they should do that. I don't like the fact that they do this. I'd rather not see it.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's hidden. It doesn't show up.
No.
And I don't know. I think it's disrespectful to the consumers, really.
Yeah, if you have an opinion on this, we'd love to hear from you at 250-386-1161. Or any tech questions, we're here today to answer. I can handle a lot of your Android questions, hopefully Windows questions as well. Brian is great with Windows and anything to do with Mac products. So we're here and we're free for you if you need us.
Back to, talking about the telecom companies in Canada, there's quite a bit of drama right now, between Shaw, Rogers, Videotron. I took a deep dive on this one last night. Bell is asking the CRTC to review the $7.5 million fine, which Bell has been ordered to pay for denying Videotron access to their telephone pole infrastructure.
Yeah. And it's sort of, you look at it and go, okay, this is a way that they're not working together.
Yes.
And this is going to cost the consumer. And they're supposed to work together to share this infrastructure. In other places, there's some precedent here. Other companies in the past have worked together on things like this.
So if you look a little bit deeper, there seems to be a little bit of a problem between Bell and Videotron right now. That's where I went to dive in. So, Bell is calling the fine inexplicably and egregiously large.
Yeah.
But it follows a previous dispute over, a dispute which Bell filed. Bell filed a complaint with the CRTC regarding Videotron's use of their roaming services. And, I won't bore you with the details of that, but in a May 25th letter, the CRTC responded saying the two parties should engage in good faith negotiations and they should exhaust all appropriate methods available to them in order to resolve the disputes before submitting applications to the CRTC.
It sounds like we have some existing hard feelings from something that's happened in the past.
Yeah, the CRTC already said, how about you play nice and not just call the teacher every time you want something to go your way? So part of me thinks
this was... won't find you $7.5 million.
Yeah, this is a spicy response to Bell, right after that happening, not playing nice. So, yeah, we'll see. I hope they keep the fine, but I'm just always happy to see the CRTC throwing their weight around, considering what the telecoms are doing.
Well, whatever works to encourage competition and gives people a better deal, because obviously from prices elsewhere in the world, we should be paying less for our phone service.
Yes.
I really think we pay too much here. So number 25, if you're reading along in our show notes, scientists have developed a smartphone app that can tell your voice if you have COVID. Early tests show it's more accurate than the traditional nasal swab home tests. The mobile app takes less than a minute to flag positive cases and gives an accurate result 89% of the time and negative cases 83% of the time.
I don't buy it. A lot of the time, you guys, the phone can't figure out the words I'm saying. And you're telling me that it's going to be able to decipher some raspiness in my voice and tell me that I have COVID and that it's not the flu?
Yeah, I would think that it would be required to sort of sample your voice when you don't have COVID.
Yeah.
When you do have COVID, and then now, it's normal again. Oh, that sounds like your voice when you had COVID. I don't really understand, because the different versions of COVID seem to affect people differently too.
Right.
When it comes to their voice and where it settles and where it's more pronounced. But who knows? It's the kind of thing they would have to run on millions of people, I think, to really find out if the accuracy is there. I'm not sure what the sample size is.
Yeah, I mean, you could just be a carrier. And also those stats are funny the way they, you know, they don't quite make sense. Give an accurate result 89% of the time and negative cases 83% of the time. Sorry, it's 83% accurate and when you're negative.
So positives are 89. Yeah, positives are 89% accurate, they're saying.
So users will be required to give information about their medical history, smoking status, and demographics, and record some respiratory sounds, such as coughing and reading a shortened sentence. So that's how they're kind of getting some of that information, but it still seems like not enough to be able to make a diagnosis without accuracy.
Well, it's encouraging. I mean, anything that's not invasive, where it doesn't involve that nasal swab or getting a blood test, you know, and going forward into the future, if this is a way, if this turns into a way that they actually can correctly detect,
I'd love to be proven wrong on this one.
Exactly.
Exactly a year after its latest hardware event, Amazon is planning to unveil new devices, features, and services next Wednesday, September 28th.
So what are they releasing?
I haven't heard. Yeah, this is just going to be, you know, like when Apple plans
it's a secret
announcement. Yeah, so we're waiting to see what features. I haven't been following that. I don't follow Amazon as closely because, you know, I think they're a big evil company, and I use them begrudgingly.
I mean, devices that use Alexa, they're a lot into automation, speakers, some certain tablets. Maybe they'll have a device that plays their Prime Video, you know, specifically, that kind of thing. But it's a little question mark. It's something interesting. If you're not doing anything on September 28th, you might want to check them out.
Yeah, we'll certainly follow the news in the Tech Talk next week. So it looks like we're due for a commercial break here. I just see the phone lines are lighting up already. So now's your chance to get in. The phone number is 250-386-1161, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Tech Talk here on CFAX 1070. If you're listening to us on Saturday, the show is live. If this is Sunday, it's a rebroadcast. Thank you for listening, but please don't call into the show. And we this week is me, Ron Fraser.
And I'm Brian Pavlich, it's your Tech Talk producer.
And here we are running through the tech news of the week, and there's lots we still haven't gotten to. We've still got free phone lines to call in, so at 250-386-1161, we'd be happy to take your call. And do you want to, shall we take the one we've got right now?
Yeah, let's jump right straight to Dan here. Hey, Dan, go ahead.
Hello, how are you guys this morning?
Great, how are you, Dan?
I'm not so bad.
What's your question?
Well, I have a bunch of Mac products, an iMac, a MacBook Pro, iPads, iPhones, and I have a whole pile of music on my iMac that seemed to just, when that power failure happened last week, just seemed to not be there.
And sorry, which device did you say was iMac?
Just on the iMac?
On the iMac, yeah.
Okay.
So when I open up the iMac and look at my files, I see essentially, iTunes, and I can start up a supposed library with the ITL.
Yeah.
However, it's from 2017, so anything previous seems to have disappeared.
Is the music everything that you've gotten through iTunes or some that you've installed yourself on the iMac?
No, most of it is all streaming stuff from iTunes.
From iTunes, stuff that you've gotten from iTunes. There should be a way to re-download your iTunes library on that.
I would imagine. I'm scared to death because both my phone and my iPad and my MacBook Pro all have the original library on them that I want.
And they're fine.
Are you signed into the iTunes app? Did you get signed out during an update or something?
I don't know. It doesn't appear to be. I can manipulate iTunes no problem, but my iMac is 2007.
Oh, yeah, so we definitely are pushing it there. iTunes will operate, you know, normally without you being signed in, but you won't just have access to purchased content and things like that. So you could very well be working in iTunes but not be signed in.
It may not be letting that machine connect your iTunes library. because some of the new songs have different rights associated with them.
And well, but the day it was playing, it was completely up to date.
Yeah, I understand that. But you're saying it only came back up. It gives you what you had in 2017,
well, no,
basically.
Well, the libraries that I can see when I look at the hard drive, I've had, a similar situation. So I made a second library one time and just cloned it.
Okay.
I can see both of those, but I can't find anything else that would suggest it's the most current.
So you do, you do certainly have two different libraries. It might be that iTunes is just pointing at the wrong one. Are you familiar with how to change?
What I'm trying to tell you. I've gone to try to change them. When I change them, all that's available is the two older ones.
Okay. There's no...
No, and I have an outboard hard drive that all of this is on. There's two libraries on that drive. And they both are the old ones.
Have you checked in your music folder on your Mac? Have you looked in there if it's maintaining a library there where it's would natively appear?
and no, there's no library.
Okay. And so to change your iTunes library, you are holding down the Option key when you open iTunes?
Yes, to demand it to make a... to allow me to change the library?
Yes.
Yeah, I am.
Okay. I'm going to have to dig a little bit more on that one. During the news break here, I'll do some more research there.
That's really odd.
Can I just simply plug one of my iPhones or my iPad into my old iMac and update from there? Or will I'm scared to lose everything. That's why.
Yeah. I can't recall if you can drag a whole library back off the phone onto the Mac.
I think it wants to load it from Apple.
Yeah, I don't actually plug my devices in that often anymore. I just always deal directly with the cloud or
on especially if you're at the limit for number of devices that you can have that library on. So I would be careful with that.
We don't have an answer for you there, Dan. I'll dig a little bit more. It might be, again, that you maintain multiple libraries. It might be some kind of problem of where it's located or it's not accessing the external properly.
We'll look for an answer, Dan, and we'll give it out on the air here, so it might help other people as well if they're having the same issue.
Yeah, feel free to stay on the line and we can follow up with you after the news break here.
Okay, great. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, sir.
We got a few minutes here. We have another call here. I didn't quite catch your name yet, but go ahead. Who are we speaking with?
Yes, hello?
Hi.
Hi. I was just curious about this new provider called Lucky.
Lucky.
Yeah.
Lucky Mobile, I believe.
Yeah, I've seen that. They're really, really inexpensive. I believe they run a really slow network. That's what I saw. I'm not sure if it's 3G. Something about it was really slow. We're just going to do a quick look here to see.
Yeah, yeah.
They're starting at like $50 a month or something.
Oh, they advertise no credit check, no long-term commitments.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I
just wondered, was it legitimate or I have a person that I know that it's... on disability and has no credit card or nothing like that. So I was wondering if it's legitimate and they can get it.
Yeah, Lucky Mobile is part of the Bell family that operates with their services. And I think, that sounds like they're the perfect option if you don't have, credit to operate with there.
And if Bell is their parent company, you don't have too much to worry about there in terms of them being there and sort of providing constant service. But I do. I've read somewhere. I'm sorry. I don't have that at my fingertips. But I've read somewhere about the speed of it. It's 4G. It runs 4G. So
yeah,
that's 4G not
LTE
bad.
Is still
very standard.
Current.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you say legitimate is if that's the main question. Yeah. They're very much a legitimate budget service provider.
There's a good chance it's all self-serve to sign up. You have to check that. So go online and have a look how to get connected. Because most of the low-cost companies don't want you to talk to them. They
right,
want you
that
just
costs
to get
money.
Yeah, just to get the SIM card, set it all up yourself. So if you're comfortable with that, sure, it's something to try, particularly if it's month by month. You're only out the cost of a SIM card in a month of service if it turns out to be awful.
Yes, and you No matter what. Oh, yeah, there's no terms on it, I guess, but yeah. You always have your 15 days of buyer's remorse to pull out.
You do, out of any sort of contract, yeah.
Yeah, they said didn't charge pay apply, so...
Yeah, well, usually it's $10, but I mean, it might be more, but they should be $5 or $10 for the SIM card.
Yeah, or connection fee or something.
Yep.
It's a one-time fee, is it, or a month?
One time, yeah. Once you own the card, that's it. Then you pay the monthly fee for service, and that's all.
Right. Send to you for install, or you've got to go...
Self-install, yeah. Generally self-install for these, yeah. Oh, your
okay,
break.
We're just losing you there. Just in time for our commercial break here. But yeah, I think we would go ahead with it. Try it if that's the, you know, that's the market you're in.
Tech Talk with Alan Perry on CFAX 1070.
Welcome back to Tech Talk here on September 24th, 25th weekend. If you're listening to us live today, that would be the Saturday. We are happy to take your calls for the last little bit of the show. 250-386-1161. Alan Perry's away. He's down doing some training right now in Palm Springs. And he will be back next weekend and joined by Gary Beyer from Tesseract Computers. And of course, with me as always in the studio is the very capable producer of the show.
I'm Brian Pavlicich. Nice to be with you all today.
It's always a pleasure. Yeah. So we've had a couple of good questions here today, and one of the ones you've been researching is sort of a missing or truncated audio file of iTunes music.
Yeah, the music library. So I just brought you back on the air here, Dan. One thing we were looking at too is, can you view your previous iTunes libraries?
I can view the. Old libraries, but not the current one.
So there's when you go to the the iTunes folder, you know, you have your folders for like album artwork, iTunes media, and then there is a folder specifically called, you know, previous iTunes libraries. Can you navigate to that folder? I'm wondering what you see in there.
Sure, just 2 seconds here.
Sometimes if it's corrupted and it's saved a previous version of the library, you can get it to restore from one of those.
Right. So if I go to it, I've got... I've got artwork Apple Music. So if I click on the Apple Music... it's just literally a list of songs from 2022.
Okay, so this is all being stored under, you know, Apple Music. You're not running it through iTunes? I forgot how the branding has worked. They switched everything.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm afraid that I think that's what's happened is that they've relabeled the file Apple Music and not iTunes. As a result, it's not where I think it should be.
And this is this all still off of your external device?
For example, click on the iTunes library.itl. The library that I'm afforded is from 2017.
This is it might be a little tougher one to crack. I think, you know, if I could get there in person, why don't you stay on the line and I'll get your contact info off the air here and maybe we can sort something out to try to restore this for you.
Sure. Or I'm just going to make a backup copy and on a thumb drive and stick it in the USB port and see if I can update that way.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
Stay tuned.
Okay. Okay. Thanks, Dan. Our contact info is in the show notes too. If you want to reach out, and we can try.
Well,
to
no,
find
you're
going to
come back to me, and maybe we'll get together. Or
oh, sure. Yeah. Just stay on the line here.
Yeah,
okay.
I will.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. That's a funny one.
Yeah. There's a few things going on here with the older machine. It's going to be running a not up to date operating system for sure. Plus the fact that Apple Music and iTunes are now two separate entities, basically.
Yes. And so on that Apple note, we got a lot of questions recently about the differences between the new AirPods, whether it's the AirPods 3 or the AirPod Pro 2. We're just quickly going to break down what the main differences are. So with the Pros, you're getting those silicone tips. that fit nicer into your ear, and you get, you know, I think with the new ones, they've released four sizes so that you can get a tip that fits you nicely versus the regular AirPods, not the Pros, are just all that hard plastic, and it's one size fits all.
Yeah, so more like an all-day fit for someone that's going to wear them a long time.
Yes, and so they actually also have a venting system for pressure equalization in your ear because they do make a seal. They have different sensors and touch controls for volume adjustment actually on the stem of the AirPod. The big one with the Pros, the main difference is this active noise cancellation. So it can cut out noise around you. Like if you have a lawnmower running in the background, it figures out the shape of that noise and it is able to cancel that from the noise that's coming into your ears. It also, the Pros have a transparency and adaptive transparency and conversation boost, which are, you know, do you let sound through or do you cancel it? You can choose how much, and you can now set it to boost the conversation. So if you were in a noisy environment, you know, Ron and I could sit across from each other with our AirPods in, and it would be prioritizing letting us hear each other, so we might not need to speak as loud. It's kind of funny to do it.
Still do noise canceling for loud background noises,
yeah,
but you could hear voices just fine.
Which is kind of a cool feature. And then, yeah, there's spatial audio and some of those things that are nice but not necessary. The main thing, I think, if you want to go up to the Pros is the comfort, and the noise canceling is just amazing. It's just so peaceful to cancel out a lot of that background noise. I'm a big fan of that. So, that's the main reasons to kind of do an upgrade to the Pro.
And if you haven't tried a set of headphones with noise canceling, whatever the brand, it is incredible. You really have to try them. The first time I'd experienced a really good pair was at CES with Alan, where Sony had a mock-up of a jet in one of their displays, and you actually sat down in an airline seat, and they handed you a pair of their noise-canceling headphones, and they had two huge speakers pumping out low-frequency sound, just like the jet engines would make. Yep. Like it sounded like you were sitting in a jet.
Right.
And you'd put the headphones on, and swear to God, and I've used these on a real plane since, it's gone. Like, that noise is completely gone. It completely cancels it.
Yeah, it's wild. So, and those big over-the-ear ones have more, they can do more than the in-ear buds.
Yes, yes.
But still, what they can do with either is, you know, so impressive.
Pretty incredible. So just to hear that, that's worth the price of admission alone, to get a pair of those to use in that sort of environment. But I use them cutting the lawn. It can almost kill the entire...
It's perfect for that.
You know, there's a certain point where it can't if it's really loud, but it still takes away like 90%
of such
the sound.
It's such a low sound that carries through. And if you have, and you know, if you've chosen the silicone tips that fit best for you, you know, you'll get a better...
Better seal,
and then you know, better noise canceling. So I always tell people to go up to the Pros. I know they're more expensive, but that's such an amazing feature, and just the comfort. Like I used to get, you know, my ears would be pretty sore when I had the previous models that just have the plastic one size fits all.
Well, and if you like them, and you probably are going to like them, you'll probably wear them more than you do now, your regular headphones. So important to have something that's a good fit.
You were mentioning a few more texts and questions that we had.
Yeah, so Gord was asking, after we talked about our guests from other countries, what they pay for cell phone service in their countries.
Yeah.
It's quite illuminating. So
okay.
Mexico is kind of closer to the North American standard, or maybe to at least the United States. But our student there is paying $30, basically Canadian, for about 8 gigs of data, with the phone service included. But the real shocker here is Brazil, where they're paying about $20 a month for 24 gigs of data.
Wow. And are you doing the currency conversion
during
there?
That's
Canadian $20 a month.
Yeah, and so I asked Carol the question. I'm guessing with that much data available to you, Wi-Fi is not an issue in your country. And she said it isn't. Like, there's no Wi-Fi.
Right. Yeah, that's like me too. I just turn off the Wi-Fi when I go out because it's usually slower than what my data is providing.
Yeah, and there's concerns about Wi-Fi, especially if it's not passworded and so on, about people hacking into it and having access to your data when you're using your device. So they have, that's so inexpensive. Like, that's just a ton of data for everyone.
Yes.
They can do everything they want to do for $20 a month. So we could do the same thing here.
And you were saying, one of you guys was running your international plan right now. You're running, was it the Mexico plan that you're using while you're here?
Yeah, Valentina's running that.
Yeah, I didn't pay to have like a Canadian number because my sisters came to Canada also. So
yeah.
So they didn't also have a Canadian number. It works the Mexican data. So I have Mexican data.
Did you have to pay extra for that or anything? Are you paying like roaming fees or international fees or anything?
Or do you just use it?
I just use it. I don't think I pay more.
Huh.
I know.
And then look at, you know, the conversation we were having last week about that family that racked up a $1,000 plus bill because of roaming fees.
Something's wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
So here's one that you'll know about, Ron. This is the first I've actually heard about this. London Great. Drugs has successfully tested the Roll-E 2.0 robotic delivery wagon.
Yeah, so they've tested a couple things in higher technology. This one is a little robot that is controlled remotely by a human who actually monitors the cameras and sounds and stuff around it.
Yep.
And I think they've gotten a couple blocks. They've made deliveries a couple blocks away using this robot.
Okay.
I know that they test marketed it here in Victoria. They had it at the 8th Street store.
Yep.
And they were test marketing it by having it rove out to the parking lot to deliver to people that were coming for pickup, like no-touch pickups outside. They just stay parked in a certain spot. The robot would bring their product out to them.
Yeah.
And people were asking, oh, well, what happens if someone just grabs the robot and runs away? Well, they could, but it's fairly well locked. It's trackable instantly by satellite. It's connected to satellite, so they'll find you.
Yeah.
And the robot is totally disabled if someone tries to open it that doesn't have the proper code.
Oh,
it's useless. It's not like they can repurpose it afterwards. That's it.
Right. So they might want what the robot is holding, though. How does it? Does it have a locked cage, or does
it
have
a death
grip?
It is. It's locked, and it's not impenetrable, but they'll find out where you are right away with the satellite location on it.
Right, and if the fact that somebody's operating it.
Yes.
It has a camera.
Yeah, you'll see. Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
So it's not the smartest thieves that might take that.
Right.
And what I don't know what they're delivering in it. I'm sure they wouldn't deliver something that's really sensitive or really expensive right now until we're 100% sure that's 100% safe.
Right.
I know that they've used a drone, like a flying drone was used to make the first robotic drone prescription delivery to someone on Salt Spring Island.
Okay.
From a London Drugs. That was a few months ago in the news.
That's great.
That's a great way when you consider, oh, there are ferry problems or someone needs something really fast and can't wait for a ferry.
Right.
I know they made a delivery from one of our stores to a Salt Spring resident.
Oh, no way.
Using a drone. Yeah. So there are good things for technology. There are some uses that really do make sense. And so I'm sure we'll see more of that. I mean, the whole point is to use them wherever they can use them, because if you haven't noticed today, it's very hard to hire employees anywhere.
Yes. Well, the weird thing is that you have someone piloting it still.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks like, well, could that person throw on a backpack and get it done just as fast?
It's probably like, you know, I consider it like the self-driving cars that we saw in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Even though they're self-driving, there's someone behind the wheel right now, because we really want to be 110% sure that everything's happening the way it should be.
Right. This is just a step.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you will see more of it in the future. There's no doubt. I've seen that Pizza Hut is also using a robot to make deliveries of small pizzas within 2 blocks.
Oh, yeah.
Of the restaurants. So they've got a couple of restaurants where they're using them to test deliveries.
Yeah, that's pretty fun. I still look forward to those future. I mean, I think there are in some places in the world the automated cars with built-in pizza ovens. So it shows up and you pull it out of the, you know, the robotic
transporting
oven.
Haven't seen that. They cook it on the way?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
It's like the pizza vending machines, except for I know the ones we have there, they actually need to get stocked. It doesn't actually make the pizza.
Oh, wow.
But let's go to another commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the final few minutes of Tech Talk here on CFAX 1070. I'm sitting in, my name is Ron Fraser, for Mr. Alan Perry, who is away right now doing some training in Palm Springs. And he will be back next weekend, and his guest will be Gary Beyer from Tesseract 2.0. And with me today, co-hosting, is
Brian Pavlicic, your Tech Talk producer. Did you get Alan's screenshot of what the weather was like for him down there right now?
Well, I had a look before he left, so I have an idea.
Yeah.
But it's pretty nice.
Oh, I'm so jealous. He was showing, I think that shot was a night market or something. He was saying the nighttime temperatures are just perfect, obviously scorching during the day.
Perfect for him. 34, he said it was at night.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the daytime, and The one I saw for today was it was going to be 42 degrees.
That's pushing it. The high 30s into the 40s is where I even kind of hit a cap.
Yeah, that's not a temperature anymore. That's a basketball score. So that's almost too much. But there, people know how to deal with it, right? There's air conditioning everywhere.
Yes, it's built for it.
Yeah.
So PCMag has reported on the fastest mobile networks in Canada. How are they doing there, Ron?
Well, apparently, Bell has the fastest mobile network in Canada.
Okay.
So Bell is the fastest. Rogers is a close second. But TELUS loses marks because Android phones on its network can't yet access 5G Plus. Now, I know mine comes up as 5G.
Yep.
But I don't think it attains the speed that 5G is capable of.
I see.
So it does show, I see that I'm connected to a 5G network. It tells me that. Mm-hmm. And it's fast. It's as fast as the fastest home connection I get, which is great.
Yep.
But I think the capability isn't there yet to allow them to do their maximum possible throughput. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at the end, those numbers maybe are a little skewed because of that detail. It's good that we point that one out. Because I found, you know, the TELUS service has been quite speedy.
Yeah.
I do still get some dropouts and like weird moments during the day for sure.
Are you with TELUS then? Or?
Yeah. I switched to TELUS because I was having some of those problems with Shaw and we found out that they don't have the best service in James Bay.
Yes.
So we switched to TELUS and now certainly at home it's better, but I do still get sections of, you know, while you're driving or something and it's taking a really long time to load podcast.
I've had that too. And TELUS has always been really good that way in the past. So I'm wondering if it's sheer volume on the network, if we're running out of room on some of the cell connection sites they have. You know, because there is a limit, like, to the number of people that could be on a node at any one time.
Okay.
When you run into that, what happens, and you probably had this happen on a call before, what happens is it'll switch to a different node. So you might be close to the one you're talking on right now, but somebody else wants to connect, and people will get bumped off and connect to the next one, even if, at least if there's just a signal there.
Yeah.
So you'll notice how your signal suddenly goes from great to like, ooh, terrible, all of a sudden. And that's not always just switching between cells. That's someone being forced off to another cell site.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes that happens too. And that was really infrequent before, and I find it more common now.
Right.
Yeah. But generally, I like their service. I've been a TELUS customer for a long time.
Yep.
And easy to call, easy to talk to them about whatever you need to talk to them about. For people that want someone to really help them navigate through cell service, it's great for that.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
So news item here, the world's highest apartment is now for sale for a mere $250 million USD. It's located on Manhattan's Billionaires Row along the southern end of Central Park. The penthouse is 1,416 feet in the sky and just 38 feet shy of the Empire State Building.
And a quarter of $1 billion. That must be a deal there.
Well, do we have photos of that? Let me.
Yeah, there's an article connected to it. It's number 32 in the show notes if you're following along with us here.
Okay, and another item we have in here that Kyle tipped us off to, this was a story from a couple of years ago, but there's a great deep dive on it on Wired.com. And it's the untold story of the 22-year-old hacker who saved the internet. And so this is referring to the WannaCry virus that was going out and was shutting down hospital computers and everything, and was, you know, one of the worst hacking attempts that we've had. And there's this young hacker on his own who single-handedly stopped it. And it's quite a funny story of how he figured out how to stop it. And then later was, you know, when he flew to the States, he was arrested for some old hacking charges, or just some hacking that he had admitted to when he was, you know, when he was later talking about how he saved this hacking incident.
Doing things that weren't legal, even if it was for a better purpose.
Yeah.
Basically.
So, yeah, we recommend that read. That's number 33 in the show notes. How are we doing for texts there, Ron?
What have we got here?
Oh, actually, let's just go through our last break, and we'll be back for the last few minutes of Tech Talk.
Welcome back to the last few minutes of Tech Talk here on CFAX 1070. Thank you for listening for the last couple of hours, and hopefully we helped a few of you with your problems and questions. And don't forget, you can always go to shownotes.ca and see all the news items we have and some of the questions and answers that are really common, especially some of the scams that are out there, because we really like to help you avoid those.
Yes, and all you iPhone users and iPad users, go check out all those tips on the new features. They're really short and easy, just getting you up to speed on how to use a bunch of those new features. I mean, a lot of people don't like updating because, oh, why did this change? Why did this move over here? You know, just check this directory and it can get you up to speed really quick.
Well, and remember, the update is often done. The main reason is to prevent you from being scammed or the phone being compromised. So if you use it for banking or anything important, and everyone does today, let's face it, we all do. So you want to have the latest updates to make sure you're protected against those sorts of things.
Yes. Okay. It looks like we're up on time here, Ron. It was such a pleasure having you in the studio. And
thanks, Brian. It's always great to come in and do the show with you. I really appreciate the time and people's time listening to the show today. I hope we helped you with something while we were going through all these different things. And Alan will be back next week with Gary Beyer as his guest when he's back from Palm Springs. And thanks for listening to Tech Talk today. We do appreciate you.
Till next time.
And so it goes, as Alan would say.